Well, if you'd like to keep that open, or alternatively, it's actually printed inside your blue sheet. So you open up inside on the top right-hand side, it's sitting there. You can follow it along there as we look at it. Now, I think here on the Northern Beaches, if you can call Terry Hills part of the Northern Beaches, I think you can, but up in this part of Sydney, we have a very good life. It's hard to beat the sorts of things that we've got around us here at Terry Hills. There is the city so close, there is the surf. If you want to get down to the beach, had a great week this week, except for Wednesday, I think, but great week for getting down to the beach. There's sailing, if you're into that kind of thing. There's shopping, and we're all into that kind of thing after Boxing Day. Wherever you may want to go. There's good food available. This is just a tremendous part of the world to live in. And we do pursue the good life in so many different ways. And, you know, I wonder whether perhaps as you pursue the good life, you find, like so many, a certain hollowness to it all. Freddie Mercury, who was the lead singer of the rock band Queen, who tragically died at the end of 1991, wrote in one of his last songs, The Miracle, on the Miracle album, he wrote this: "Does anyone know what we're living for?" Lee Iacocca, you know, that business management guru from yesteryear, he was the one who restored the Chrysler Corporation to profitability back in the 1980s. And in his autobiography, he wrote this. He said, "Here I am in my twilight years, still wondering what it's all about. I can tell you this, fame and fortune is for the birds." You see, it's possible to have it all, to have everything, and yet still be empty. To realise that there's something very important missing from the heart of life. And so, like these, we ask the question, is there more to life? And can Jesus add something to that which helps in the mix of our thinking? Well, let's look at this passage from Luke chapter 18, and I'll point out bits and pieces of it as we go through. As you could see, Jesus' story here, and it's a made-up story of Jesus to make a point, it's the story of two men. One of them had a life, and the other one, it seems, needs to get a life. They are being religious. They are going up to the temple to pray, as people did in that era. We're perhaps these days not all that religious as people, and we may need to translate this into our situation. The first man is what is called a Pharisee. And the Pharisees were a very strongly religious movement. They were a lay movement amongst the Jews. They were all about keeping God's commandments. And this Pharisee comes up to pray with a lot of self-confidence. In our version here, in verse 11, it says the Pharisee stood up. And the words that are behind that, it really is the idea of he takes his stand. You know, there's a sense of certain pride here. He takes his stand before God. He prays with confidence. And we look at this fellow and say he's got a pretty healthy self-esteem. Perhaps he overdoes it just a little bit by our Australian standards. And so he says, "I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers." We're not that kind of people. We wouldn't say that out loud terribly much. But there is a little bit of this guy, I think, in each one of us. Most of us would tend to say, look, we're not religious people, but we're not bad people. We're not bad. And in fact, we're glad not to be bad. Sorry about that. But we're glad not to be bad. And so we give to some charities. I'd be surprised if not many of us, if many of us hadn't given to the flood appeals that have been going on. Many people are involved in community service at all sorts of levels, the Rotary and other community organisations, the school and so on. We have our neighbours and our friends over from time to time. We believe in an honest day's work. We're good to our spouse. We're good to our kids. So we're glad not to be bad people. But quietly, we are like him in other sorts of ways. And so we're walking down the streets somewhere, perhaps in the city, and we see a drunk on the street, and we say, that's not me. Or we see a couple abusing one another and fighting, and you say, that's not us. We listen to some bragging co-worker, and we say, it's not me. Or some parent treating their child very badly. We say, I'm not like that. So there is a bit of this Pharisee in each one of us. There's a bit of this pride. The second man is a tax collector. Now, I don't think any tax collector has ever been or won one of the popularity contests. But we need to understand that tax collectors in the ancient world, this tax collector, occupied a much lower position than tax collectors do otherwise in our world. This guy seems to be a loser. He doesn't have much of a life. The first guy sees the good in his life and he gives thanks to God for that. But this guy, the second guy, he is a traitor to his own. Because at this time in history, the Romans were in control of Israel, as well as the whole empire, and there were Roman troops stationed everywhere through Israel. They were the occupying power. And so when this man collected taxes, he collected it from his Jewish compatriots, and he gave that money to the Romans, who were hated because they were the occupying power. How would you feel socially, do you think, if you were responsible for buying up businesses and property in Sydney on behalf of the North Korean government? How do you think you'd feel socially? You may not mention it at parties, I suspect. Well, that's how this guy felt. He lived a shady and an unworthy life. And in a sense, it was right that he stood at a distance. There wouldn't have been many people near him. He has low self-esteem. You see, he's racked with guilt. He seeks pity, do you notice? He's a loser with God, if you like. He wants mercy from God. He doesn't see that he's got anything to offer God. Now, what are we to make of these two guys? Well, Jesus says something about them which catches us a little bit off guard. Look with me at verse number 14. He says, I tell you, this is Jesus, he says, I tell you that this man, the tax collector, rather than the other man, the Pharisee, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Now let me unpack that a little bit for you. That word justified is a word that means in the right with God. The Pharisee, he had a lot and he knew it. He was a moral, upstanding man and he was proud of it. But he was missing one thing. He was not right with God. Why? We'll come to that in a minute. And yet this tax collector, who in so many ways is the loser, this man, the traitor, had something far more valuable than that Pharisee had. Because as he left the temple, Jesus says, he was in the right with God. He was justified. Now, how is that possible? Well, look at the end of that verse number 14. He says, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Those who are proud of themselves will be brought low. And those who see themselves before God as having nothing will be lifted up. Now, in what sense is he humble? He's humble in the sense that he knows he's what the Bible calls a sinner. In fact, as he's called here. He's a man who has regrets about his life. He's a sinner in the sense that he's a rebel against God. He's a man who has wronged God and other people. In fact, he has wronged God by his treatment of other people. And he's acutely aware of that fact. He's unworthy of anything before God because of it. And so he throws himself on the mercy of God. And Jesus says the person who is humble like that will be lifted up and made right with God. They will have life. The proud won't see life. God's anger remains on that Pharisee. You see, confidence about oneself is actually very dangerous before God. And so, what about you and what about me? Most people I've ever talked to tend to say, well, look, I'm good enough with God. At least I hope I am. I wonder if that's the way you think. The Pharisee is very, very impressive. Let me say, he is a man who knows what the Ten Commandments are. He knows where to go to find them. And not only the Ten Commandments, he knows all the details of God's law that flowed on from it. I wonder if you know all those details of God's law. If you're anything like me, you probably don't, let alone keep it all, as the Pharisees worked to do. This Pharisee is a very, very impressive man. And yet, he could not make himself good enough for God. How can a person be good enough? Only when they humble themselves and admit that they are sinful, that we are unworthy before God. Only when we throw ourselves on the mercy of God And if we will do that, God promises that there will be forgiveness. There will be forgiveness because this same Jesus who's telling this story went on to give his life in death on the cross to pay the debt you and I owe. So is there more to this life? I want to suggest to you today that the most important ingredient of all in life is that a person be right with God. That they be right with God through the death of Jesus who paid for their guilt. It's only when a person finds that new relationship with God that the hollowness of their life is filled. And that is the person who finds life even when they don't have the beach or the shopping or whatever it may be. They find life in ways they never expected. And I want to ask you today, do you have it? Do you have this life? Well, let me pause there. We have a question time after our talks each week. And I want to ask if you have any questions about what I've had to say, or you might have questions about some other matter. Feel free to ask it. We love it when people ask questions. Kath.
When you said that having confidence in ourselves is a dangerous thing, I'm just going to... Anyway, you're not saying then necessarily that we shouldn't be positive people, like we don't want to walk around looking like, oh, we're dumb and we're stupid or whatever. You're not saying that. You're saying recognising that even the things that we could excel in and be confident in still come from God. Is that...
Yeah. Could you hear that up the back? No. Kath's asked the question, when I said that a bit of confidence is a dangerous thing, did I mean that therefore we shouldn't have a certain self-confidence or and so on? Is that the kind of thing I meant? No, I was really talking there about our relationship with God. If there is a sense in which we feel as if we've made it with God because of something that's in us or something we've done, that's really dangerous. I'm not talking about the sort of self-confidence of knowing that I can hold a conversation with somebody. I'm not talking about the sort of self-confidence of knowing that I can do my job. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this sort of confidence which thinks I'm okay and therefore I don't need Jesus to die for me. I don't need God's mercy or pity. That kind of confidence is the dangerous thing. Yeah. Any other questions you want to throw in? I've got off lightly today. Okay, well, I want to encourage you to find a relationship with God and to fill that emptiness. I hope you all received a copy of The Essential Jesus, and I want to encourage you to read that and to look again at this person, Jesus, as an adult. He is very impressive indeed. And have a read, weigh him up. The other thing to say is if you're a person who really does want to begin a new relationship with God, if you look in your blue sheet, down the bottom of the page, there is a prayer. It is the kind of prayer, you might like to phrase it in your own words, but it is the kind of prayer you could be praying to God, to ask him for that new relationship. And God promises that if you ask him for a relationship like this, he will give it to you. You come humbly to him. So please make use of that. Thank you. Yes, Rob, go for it.
What's always worried me about that story is that the tax collector still continues to go and lead a bad life after he's gone to church. I find that confusing about
right.
How he is viewed then by
yes.
Jesus.
Yes. The problem is that we don't actually know what happened afterwards because it's a story Jesus told. So we tend to assume he went back to his tax collecting, but he may not have. It's also possible that there are issues going on in his life which he's asking forgiveness. But the problem is we don't know the end of the story. And Jesus' point in the story is to point to his humility. If you look at the very beginning of the story, printed there, he says, to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. So that's his point. So it's better to be careful and not sort of assume too much and just let Jesus speak about that point rather than assuming too much more. Don't know whether that completely answers the question, Rob. Yep, okay. Any more? Yes, Sandy.
I was just going to say about that the job that he was doing wasn't a bad job. It was a necessary job, wasn't it?
Yes.
And so even though it was looked down upon, even if he went back to it after that, it was his job that
yes.
he had to perform.
Yes. Actually, I don't know whether you still have your Bible open, but if you were to go on to chapter 19, you'll see one of the headings that our version puts in is the heading Zacchaeus, the tax collector. And that's a reminder that often tax collectors didn't just collect taxes. That's very helpful, Sandy. They didn't just collect taxes. They skinned off a lot more than they needed to and put it into their own pockets. And that was probably the error that he was pointing to. That's actually helpful. Thanks, Sandy. They used to skim it off. And in the story of Zacchaeus in chapter 19, and you can read about it in your Essential Jesus, in that story of Zacchaeus, the man gets up and says, look, I'm actually going to turn away from that life of skimming off. And if I've defrauded anyone, I'm going to pay them back four times, I think he says. He makes a complete change of direction in his life. Yeah, thanks, Sandy. Okay.